You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
All right, I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna do it wrong. I'm about to spit in this mic like freestyle elfin, you know?
Okay, okay. Wait, hold on. Does it make sense?
No, but who cares? All right, let's go. Finally, we. You're not even gonna last. All right. Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival, fountain, just back from France. Montreal? What the f***? It's a script! I couldn't even... What? Victoria's pretty good, not bad festival. Fountain's just back from France. What are you even saying here? Oh, you're trying to say these are the things featured in this one. You should probably specify that. Because even a f***ing elf couldn't understand that, okay?
Think you can do better than an elf? At CITR, we want to have a variety of voices on the air. Want to write scripts? Do some voice acting? Broadcast your creativity? Volunteer with the CITR Production Department. No experience? We can also train you in everything required. Send an email to psas@citr.ca.
Hello, you are listening.
To learn more. And don't wait to get your voice on the air.
This September 15th through 18th, the 9th Annual Rivlandia Festival will transform the city of Victoria. Featuring a diverse lineup of artists across numerous stages, all within walking distance of the city's beautiful and historic downtown core. This year's lineup includes Jurassic 5, Michael Franti and Spearhead, Wolf Parade, Ex-Ambassadors, De La Soul, Band of Skulls, Prozac, and more. Join us for 4 days of music, food, art, and fun. Visit rifflandia.com for details.
Hello, you are listening to A Face for Radio on CITR 101.9. Hello, 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 hello. Sorry for all of the confusion. I just spent the past hour trying to make an intro, or making an intro, and it isn't playing, which is very annoying. Anyway, we have a very special show today. I did an interview with the musician and artist and jewelry maker, Rebecca Schiffman. She has a new album out, it's self-titled. It came out last month, and you should check it out. So I had the wonderful opportunity to chat with her. I was planning on doing a 20 to 30 minute chat, but there were too many things that I wanted to ask her about, and too many things to talk about. So it ended up going for about an hour longer than expected. And I have split up the interview into two parts. So today we're going to get to listen to part one, and then next week make sure to tune in for part two. And she also gave some song suggestions. I have a couple songs, so those are going to be played a little bit later. But first we're going to start off with one of her tunes and then go right into the interview. And hopefully I'll figure out how to get the intro so that you can listen to it halfway through the show. All right. Hope you enjoy. Here is Rebecca Schiffman with Tips for Conquering Fear of Flying, followed by my interview with her.
Close my eyes, I'm sitting on a big cat, creeping through the jungle, moving fast and slow. Her shoulder blades are shifting, they move me up and down. She stops and purrs, louder than an engine. There's no escape. This is what I say.
On CITR 101.9 FM. I'm your host, Eric Coates, and I am very fortunate to have Rebecca Schiffman on the show today for an interview. Rebecca Schiffman is a multi-talented musician, artist, and jewelry maker, and she has a new self-titled album out now that you can find online and in stores. How's it going, Rebecca?
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you for agreeing to come on the show and to do the interview. First off, I just want to ask, you know, how has the reception to the new album been? You know, do you have any tour plans? Any possible Vancouver visits in the future?
Well, I'd love to come to Vancouver. I don't have any plans right now, but if someone invited me to play a show, I would definitely be interested. The album reception so far has been small but positive. It's just slowly getting out there, basically through Facebook and, well, now through the radio.
Yeah.
But I haven't had any formal reviews, except by a radio station manager, but I don't know if the general public sees that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think it's more for other DJs, but I was pretty excited about it.
Okay. Yeah, I think, I don't know if you sent the album here to our station, but if you do, we will also do, give the music director someone on that. We'll do a review that'll be for all of the DJs. So, you know, not Rolling Stone, but, you know, something.
Yeah. So far, I've released one video, which is for the song Tips for Conquering Fear of Flying, and that's gotten a great response. And I think I'm going to release at least 2, maybe 3 more videos throughout the year. So that'll hopefully get songs in more people's ears.
Yeah, no, I've seen the video. It's very cool. It's a fun video. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Yeah, we'll maybe get to that because I think I have a question about that song a little bit later. But first, I want to ask you, if I'm correct, this is your third album, and your first album in 7 years. So
what that is correct.
What was the process like making this album as opposed to your first two? Just the process and also where you're at in your own life, how you think that's influenced the character of each one.
So I haven't really thought about comparing them. I can tell you the process of this album, and then maybe some comparison will come out.
Sure.
Right now. I had about half of the songs written, and since it had been so long, I wasn't really writing that often. I would kind of wait for a song to come to me.
Yeah.
So, I don't know, I was averaging like 2 or 3 a year. Not great, I think. But then I decided, okay, I want to start recording again. I'd moved to Los Angeles, and I didn't really know where to record out here. And so I sent a email to everyone I know out here in music asking, hey, would you know any cool recording studios, producers, anyone that you think might be a good fit for my music? And my friend Ruben Cox, who owns Old Style Guitar in Silver Lake, he just wrote back and CC'd Money Mark and me, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you guys should meet. So I met Mark, and I was a fan of his solo stuff, and I knew, you know, that he had been in the Beastie Boys and played with Beck, but I really liked his solo stuff and thought that would be a good fit for me. We met, and he said, hey, I'm free to record. Like, let's do it, but we got to start next week, or it was something really fast. And
oh,
I only
wow.
had, like, 4 songs that I felt like I wanted to include. So I just forced myself every day to write, which is not what I'm used to. And I ended up writing the other half of the album. And I think most of my favorite songs came from that, which is pretty exciting for me, knowing now that I can force myself to write songs and it will sometimes have a positive result. So then we went into the studio, and it ended up taking us a little while to get going. And so we didn't end up finishing that week. We sort of recorded sporadically throughout the year. He was touring a lot. I think he was on tour with David Byrne a lot last year.
Wow.
So whenever he'd be back in town and happen to have free time, we'd squeeze in a few days. I think, the week he was free, I think my bass player or drummer was away, so yeah, there's all sorts of logistical issues. But it ended up being kind of relaxed, where we would meet up again, see where we're at, and bring in different friends to play on stuff. And so that's how this album came about. And I guess the previous two albums were more scheduled. Like, we booked 10 days in the recording studio, and at the end of those 10 days, it's done.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah, this album, it feels, I've been listening to it a lot, and there's definitely a lot of layers, sort of different instrumentation that comes out on repeated listens. And I haven't been able to find your first album, but I've listened to the second one, To Be Good for a Day, a fair amount as well, and that one's a little bit more stripped back, I guess. I don't really have a question about that, but I do, however, have a question about your move, because you moved from New York to Los Angeles Do you think, and you said that you wrote a lot of the songs, or half of the songs, for the new album in LA, just on the spot. How has the move been? You know, are you liking LA? How are the scenes different in each city?
I do like LA a lot. It took me a little time to get used to it, mainly because I didn't know how to drive when I moved here.
Oh, yeah. That's
tough. Being from New York, my parents don't drive. We never had a car. So it was kind of stressful to get around at first, like just to go grocery shopping. I might have to take two buses and then carry all the stuff. And it's, I mean, I guess I would do that in New York, but somehow the buses work better in New York. So I guess, I don't know, just moving anywhere, I imagine, is stressful. Like finding people, even though it's LA and there's so many people here, it took me a little while to figure out who to play music with. And part of it got easier just because a bunch of people I knew in New York ended up moving out here.
Yeah.
And, of course, I met a lot of people through my husband, but most of them are in the writing world, not so much people that I might play in a band with. But we did go, we still go to a ton of shows out here, and that's a good way to meet music people. I'm trying to think, I think just the public transportation at first was sort of something to get over. And now I feel super comfortable here and I love it. It's weird to compare to New York. It's really different. And I love my life here and our house and our pets, which I couldn't have in New York. But I was in New York for so long, I mean, my whole life until I moved here, that sort of like the motherland.
Yeah. Yeah, well, did you ever take the subway? Do you take the subway in L.A.?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I first moved out here, I got this full-time job that was kind of like a dream job, designing jewelry for a really big company. But it was on the other side of town. And to get there, it took just under 2 hours, and I experimented with all of these different combinations of bus and subway routes. In the end, the most efficient way to get there was 3 buses, and they're each local, and each took around 40 minutes. But I definitely experimented with, like, 2 subways, 2 buses, or 1 subway, 3 buses. And, yeah, so the subways, they're okay. They don't go that fast here because they also go overground, and they don't go to as many places. But the benefit of taking public transportation for a few months was that I got to see a lot of areas that I wouldn't normally see just because the bus route didn't go directly from where I was leaving to where I was going. So I'd have to go to some intersection totally out of the way that I might never see. I remember I discovered a little cafe on my way to that job that probably won't be back
because
I'm never on that block, but it's
kind of nice. Yeah, well, I spent a summer in LA a while ago, and I remember that I was just completely amazed that there was a subway there. Because, I mean, I've seen, you know, hundreds of movies set in LA, and never once is the subway mentioned. I feel like everyone in the world who has seen a movie that's set in New York knows about the subway system there. So it's just... But that's a very good point about the transit. Yeah. Do you have a car now?
There is one movie that came out recently where the bus is featured in L.A., Tangerine.
Yeah.
Which I
recommend.
Great
movie. Yeah, that's actually the first movie that I saw that, I think last year or earlier this year. And I remember when they take the subway and they're on the bus, I was like, okay, this is great. But also just, that is a terrific film.
Yeah, I loved it. I watched it twice almost, you know, within a week because I enjoyed it so much.
Yeah, it also, that movie to me seemed very contemporary, for lack of a better word, but the medium, because it was filmed on an iPhone, I thought at first it was a bit of a gimmick, you know, when I was reading about the movie, but then I watched it, and it worked so well, and it just seemed like a very real movie of its time. So, yeah.
I totally agree.
Yeah, anyone listening to it should watch to this should watch it.
I don't know if you can hear a little like clattering on wood, but that's my dog kind of tap dancing around.
Oh, nice. What kind of dog do you have, and what's its name?
She is a pug. Her name is Rudy, and she was my husband's. He adopted her maybe 10 years ago back in New York.
Oh, nice. That's great.
But now she's mine too.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Rudy, for coming on the show as well, making an appearance. But now I guess I'd like to talk a little bit about your lyrics. I'm a big fan. They're very sincere, funny, poignant. It reminds me a lot of songwriting by people like Ray Davies, The Kinks, Robin Hitchcock, Syd Barrett, Stuart Murdoch of Bell and Sebastian, Stephen Merritt of the Magnetic Fields. But it also reminds me of J.D. Salinger, which is a pretty big compliment because I think he's one of the all-time greats. And I recently reread The Catcher in the Rye, which I think everyone should do as an adult. I feel like it's a book that, you know, like, everyone has to read it in high school, or a lot of people have to read it in high school, and then they enjoy it, but they associate it with that time in their life and sort of don't either fix it in that time and adore it or respect it because of that, but still sort of think of it as like a book for young adults, whereas I think it has a lot to give on repeated readings.
I will admit I haven't read it since high school.
Well, if you have time, it's definitely worth it. But anyways, in the book,
I will think about that.
Holden Caulfield is, you know, he's just like sick of the phoniness and the world, and he sort of, or Salinger through him, sort of proposes a worldview in which frankness is a virtue, and where there's a real struggle, both universal and personal, to be, you know, frank and honest and sincere or whatever. And I feel like you do something similar in your music, especially lyrically, but also musically with sort of unusual melodies or just slightly off-kilter sort of chord progressions and things that you wouldn't necessarily expect. But especially lyrically, I think that there's a similarity in that, and I just wanted to know if you agree, and in other words, if you think that there is a sort of worldview of sorts that you want to express through your songs, and if so, what is it, or is it just a sort of expression of yourself or your day to day experiences, or I mean, it could be both as well.
I think about the things you just brought up. For one thing, my songs are definitely personal and pretty specific, which can sometimes be a little embarrassing to sing, but I find it way more embarrassing, the idea of having to sing filler lyrics or, you know, words that maybe like sound cool but don't mean anything. I don't think I could do that with a straight face. Like, that's even more embarrassing somehow.
Yeah.
And I guess I kind of apply that to, like, when I used to do more painting, too, they'd be somewhat personal, specific scenarios. And I guess my hope in that is that if something is honest, even if it's not a universal experience, it's somehow you can relate to it more, like the universality of specificity. Like, I had this kind of breakthrough moment when I was at a summer program at RISD in high school, and we all had to paint the room we were in. And I was painting this room pure white with columns in the window, and the teaching assistant, Jordy Rosenblum, who actually became sort of my painting mentor after that summer, he came over and asked why I hadn't painted the graffiti that was on the column. And I realized I'd sort of avoided it because it seemed to mar this idealized version of the room, like this pure white architecture.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking about it and was like, wait, that's there in this moment. Why would I not include it? And it actually makes the painting much more interesting because, I mean, you could see this stark white room anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of maybe a moment where I started to think about that more. And then I also remember in college reading Nadja by André Breton, the surrealist writer.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a whole introduction about how writers should live in glass houses and use real names. And I remember sort of gathering from that what I'm most qualified to write about is my unique experience, and other people can, I think, relate to that rather than trying to sort of come up with a universal truth from some other angle. I don't know.
No.
Anyway,
no, totally.
I think about those things. Yeah.
No, that's that's great. It's also like we were talking about Tangerine. That's a movie that's very specific, specific to the time and the place. It's set there. These people, I mean, I don't know. From what I've read, it's sort of based on the director meeting a few people who went to that, to the donut place where the movie's set, and then talking to them, and from that, sort of creating a story around that. But that's like a world that is specific and unique and very different from one that I inhabit, you know, that I have lived, yet I feel like I gained much more from watching that and learning about or just experiencing that than I do if I'm reading or watching or listening to something that, you know, is sometimes that I could sort of categorizes saying, okay, this is something that I directly understand or whatever. And mm-hmm. And I mean, that's, I guess one of the great things about your music is that through sort of, you know, personal stories and everything, that something else comes out of that. And also, similarly, there's a couple songs I was gonna get this later, but we'll talk about now in this album, like "Time for Your Renaissance" and "Tips for Conquering Fear of Flying," which I guess could be loosely categorized in air quotes. I'm gonna say, the advice song genre, which mm-hmm. I generally think is the worst type of music. Like, for the longest time, I hated James Taylor. Still not a huge fan, but I respect him more because I thought that all of his music was just like a self-help book with fingerpick guitar, and I thought it was just unbearable. And I think a lot of that was because I couldn't relate to James Taylor singing about this as if he was singing about something of his own. It seemed like he was just some guy telling me, you know, this is what you should do, blah, blah, like, you've got a friend. That song, when I, later, for the, like, 10 years, I didn't know that it was written by Carole King, and when I listened to her version, I love that song, and I can get stuff out of it because it seems like it's a real experience. And, you know, not to, you know, to hate too much on JT, but, you know, that's, I feel like there's something similar, so I just wanted to see, you know, how did you how did you land on the Carole King spectrum and not the James Taylor spectrum of the advice song with these? Was it just through, you know, making it or just talking about your own, you know, life?
Well, I mean, I think of these as slightly tongue-in-cheek advice songs, like meaning tips for conquering fear of flying. I guess it's supposed to sort of sound like a cheesy book, but that one's definitely from my own experience. And I guess in the lyrics, I don't actually tell anyone to do anything. It's just me relating what I do to get over my fear of flying, which relates to cognitive behavioral therapy. And the chorus is basically a script that I actually say when I'm on a plane, which is, I've had a great life, I can't complain, surely there are worse ways to die. And I think I was actually using that while flying before I wrote this song, not the other way around. And also the thing about riding on a big cat, that was one flight where that worked. And then I would close my eyes and imagine that the turbulence was a big, like, tiger or something moving, and I was riding it. And it, maybe it's walking and shifting slowly, and the noise of the engine is the cat purring or something. It worked on one flight, but when I tried it again, it didn't work. So now I go to the script and also Valium. Yeah, that one is very specific to my experience. And then the other one, Time for Your Renaissance, I actually do feel a little sheepish saying Time for Your Renaissance. It's like a little grandiose. But in the verse, I reference reading self-help books, which is the part where I say, so many books you've read, there's no excuse, complicated tricks to get you to do your work. That's also my own experience of having trouble getting stuff done, making the work, and reading books that sort of give you all these ways, like keeping a journal and stuff. So I guess it's sort of a self-help song, but more like about it than telling me what to do.
So that's I wanted to ask, did you, when you wrote it, were you writing it about your own sort of struggle, like creative struggles?
Definitely.
Okay. Yeah, because I like how I kind of like the grandiose nature of the title. You know, because I felt like I could relate to that whenever I'm trying to write or make music. And I mean, I haven't even had my naissance yet, but, you know, let alone a renaissance. But I feel like there are a lot of the things that you talked about that, you know, made me feel like, even that one, like complicated tricks to get you to do your work, and just like emphasizing doing your work over and over again in the song, it just seemed just a very good expression of how hard it can be to do something that at times is the easiest thing in the world. So.
Yeah, it can be hard, but it's all, you know, I feel like in my mind or other people's minds, like, I think fear, insecurity, and so I'm definitely trying to get over that. And actually, I've been trying a similar thing using cognitive behavioral therapy, which, if you're not familiar with, is used to treat certain I think it's used to treat many things.
But, I use it for insomnia.
Did it work?
Sort of, if I followed it properly, yeah. I went to a sleep doctor who gave me like a sleep diary and prescribed times for me to sleep and amounts of time that I should stay in bed and, you know, not to be in bed, when not sleeping and all these other things to make your, basically to force your body into associating your time in bed as like the automatic of going to sleep. And if you can't fall asleep, then to get out and, you know, do other things. Anyway, yeah.
Ah, that makes sense. Wait, I had another, like there was another reference. Oh, right. I initially was treated with it for OCD, and it worked, and it was amazing because that was like my life struggle forever, to the point where I couldn't really get anything done, and it worked so well that now I try to apply it to other things. So when I'm writing a song, now there's so many distractions. Like, I don't know, in high school, I would write stuff and not, you know, take breaks or worry about how does this sound. And now I'll be writing something, and when I get the slightest hint of maybe this is kind of stupid, I'm just like, what's going on CNN? What's on Facebook?
Yeah.
And so now when I get that urge to just, like, check out from what I'm doing, I lean into my worst fear, and I'll just say, this is the worst song ever. You are the worst songwriter in the world. This sucks. It's so stupid. And then somehow that kind of neutralizes it. Well, it's like, well, if it's so bad, then, like, why even worry about it? I'll just, like, try to work on it a little more. And because it's so ridiculous, like, I don't really believe that. So saying out loud what the underlying fear actually is and then saying, like, it's not that bad. it kind of neutralizes from two different angles, I guess.
Yeah, no, that's I'm glad it works. And that, I mean, that's that sounds like a good plan that I'm gonna try and get into, because I feel like anytime I write something, it goes from a moment of, and it can be, you know, like a few days or a few minutes, where I go, okay, this is the greatest thing that has ever been written in the history of time. Like, people need to read this. This is brilliant. People need to listen to this. And then, you know, after however long, it just goes to the complete opposite of, like, this is the worst thing that has ever been made. You're a complete hack. It's totally derivative. There's nothing original. And it's just terrible. And I get paralyzed between the two. Often.
I relate to that so much. And I didn't even realize that until very recently. I was recounting the story of a few years ago when I ate too much pot chocolate. Like, I hadn't smoked pot since, like, high school. And
yeah.
I didn't know. I thought it was like a chocolate bar and you could just eat, like, a row of chocolate, you
yeah.
know? Like, why would they make it a chocolate bar if you're not supposed to eat it like a chocolate bar? So I ate an entire row, and it was terrible. It was, like, 12 hours of thinking I was going to die, followed by 12 hours of sleep. But at the offset, the effect was I would have an idea, just say something, like a sentence, and right as I started saying it, it would be totally mundane. I would just have this feeling like, this is the greatest thought I've ever had. This is so significant and brilliant. And by the end of the sentence, I would start to trail off and not even finish saying it because I thought it was the stupidest idea I'd ever had, and would just be filled with shame and insecurity. And
yeah.
It was so dramatic, and it was just recently when I was talking about it with someone that I realized, I think that like pot overdose created this example. It was like a microcosm of what I generally experienced on a slightly more drawn out scale time-wise. So that was like showing me what's happening in my life, but within one sentence.
Yeah.
And so I definitely get that, like, within trying to write a song, or, you know, before I finish it, I start to doubt it. And I think, I know a lot of people have that too. And I think maybe people that have a easier time finishing things, maybe that doubt doesn't set in until later or never at all.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, those people are lucky, I guess. Or maybe not. I don't know.
Well, hopefully there's a way to train your brain to not pay attention to that doubt. Or, you know, I mean, of course it's helpful to be self-critical and improve what you're working on, but when it becomes debilitating, it's not useful. So hopefully with things like CBT, I can train my brain to say, okay, that doubt's there, but let's not, like, let it take over.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like the idea that you were talking about when it, that point sets in where you think this is just awful, just going and saying, like, well, screw it. It can't get much worse, you know? Like, let's just keep going. I think that's a good way to think about a lot of things, where it's like, well, if it doesn't matter, or if it's this horrible, that's the gateway to making it matter, making something out of it. But yeah, I also wanted to ask you, you know, because you make jewelry and you paint, do you approach those the same way that you approach your music? Like, are you trying to express similar things, or are you trying to express different things in the different mediums? Yeah, just how does it come about? Like, why do you decide to write a song as opposed to make a piece of jewelry, or vice versa?
Painting, I think, is similar to music for me, where I'll have an idea, something I want to convey, and execute it. Jewelry, which I'm not very active in right now, it's just not personal so much. Like, it started where I wanted to learn how to make chainmail. And back then, I guess this was when I was in college in like 2000, 2001, I learned how on the internet through this message board website of chainmail enthusiasts, where it was mostly like Renaissance costumes being made. And I learned from that, and then, you know, I had certain ideas about what I wanted to be able to wear myself, so I'd make it for myself, and then people would say, hey, can you make me one of those? So it was just like a cool little object that I wanted to have. And then I got more interested in the craft and actually studied for a few years with this model maker in New York, Fred DeVos. I learned wax carving from him. And then I became really interested in the architectural carvings on buildings in New York City. And so I would translate those into jewelry pieces by taking photos and then carving miniatures of them on a ring or a pendant.
Oh, that's cool.
It wasn't like I was trying to express a personal sentiment. I was just thinking, that would be cool. I know that. and I haven't felt as motivated. Well, I'm a terrible business person or salesperson. I don't enjoy that part of life. I'm terrified of making cold calls or going into a store with my work. It's easier to put something up on the internet. Whenever I've had jobs, it's always more like data entry or editing, not so much like front of house work. So yeah. I loved making the jewelry, but then turning it into a viable business was very stressful. And so now it's more like if somebody wants something or places an online order, I'll make it, but I'm not like in the jewelry hustle anymore.
Okay. Well, then Grimes wore your jewelry at Coachella. Grimes, also Vancouver native, by the way. How did that come about?
I didn't put that together before.
Well, most people associate her with Montreal,
Vancouver.
I guess, because that's where she's based and has been for a long time. But I think she grew up here. Or she did, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, how did that come about? I mean, if you're not in in the jewelry hustle, so to speak.
I have a story. So my friend Turner is a stylist. She's like Cher Turner. And she has been very supportive over the years. She's pulled a bunch of my pieces for different shoots. And she was going to style Grimes for Nylon Magazine, and she knew somehow that Grimes loved chainmail. So she pulled a couple pieces. They ended up getting worn in two of the photos in the spread, which is a really cool spread of nylon, like a year and a half ago or something. And they really hit it off, and Turner became Grimes' stylist. So occasionally they'll use the chainmail pieces in a couple music videos. But the most exciting thing for me was this year Grimes wore these chainmail glovelets I made at both of her Coachella performances. And I had made that design first like 6 years ago or something. And I don't know, I mean, it's meant to be worn by some kind of glamorous rock star. Like, it's not a design you would just wear, like, even to a fancy thing or a casual thing. It's like a performance piece.
Yeah.
And I didn't really have any hopes that something would happen with it, but seeing Grimes in it, in the photos from Coachella, I feel like that piece, like, lived its fullest life. Like, I have no higher hopes for that chainmail glovelet. It, like, actualized itself at Coachella on Grimes. So that made me really happy.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. That's a great story, too.
She's, like, the perfect person for it.
Yeah, no, totally. I saw the pictures, some pictures of her wearing it.
Study and Go Abroad Fair is back on Saturday, September 24th at the Vancouver Convention Center. Meet face-to-face with top universities from around the world and start planning to travel. Learn about degrees in law, medicine, health sciences, arts, technology, pharmacy, business, hotel management, and much more. Check out our travel zone for volunteering, language programs, adventure travel, and work abroad. For more info, visit www.studyandgoabroad.com. Admission is free.
Tune in Sundays from 9 till 10 p.m. for bootlegs and B-sides with your host, Doran, for the finest in soul, dubstep, ghetto funk, and electro.
All right, we are back. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. The show is A Face for Radio, and we just listened to the first part of my interview with LA-based musician Rebecca Schiffman. And before that, we listened to the song Tips for Conquering Fear of Flying, which I forgot to ask her about in the interview and forgot to mention here, which is Nels Klein, who plays guitar for Wilco, and also recently released a solo album called Lovers, plays guitar on that song, which is pretty good. I saw Wilco live, and he can shred. So you can tell in the song. Anyways, fun fact. And also, I forgot to mention in the interview, and I think earlier, how I first heard about Rebecca Schiffman. I went to this show, Christopher Owens. He was the singer and songwriter for a band called Girls, which I love very much. But Girls had broken up by the time that I really got into them. So Christopher Owens was doing a solo show here at the Biltmore, and I went to see it. It was a great show, and I took a video of some part where he was doing a little solo. And I never do that. I rarely take pictures or videos at concerts. But for some reason I did. And then for some reason I posted it on Instagram, which I also do rarely.
I probably have like 10 posts a year on Instagram. And either way, I decided to do it, and someone liked it, who I didn't notice their name, so I clicked on who that person was, and it was John M.F. Anderson, who I looked through the pictures, and I realized he's the guitarist for Christopher Owen's band during the show, so he was the guy playing guitar. I thought, oh, that was pretty cool that he liked it. You know, I felt like I'd made it, so I followed him, and then, I don't know, a year later, he posted something about Rebecca Schiffman, either that she had a show or a song. I can't remember what it was, but I just remember looking at the picture and I thought, okay, this is cool. It's like 11:30 p.m. I was in my boxers and t-shirt and I was getting ready to go to bed. I was at my dad's place, so I had to set up the futon. And I just searched her up on Bandcamp. And at that point, she only had her second album up there, To Be Good for a Day. And I started listening to it while I was getting my bed ready and going to brush my teeth. And just connected with it right away. Love the melodies and the songwriting got me. And I started listening to the lyrics and I was captivated. And then from then on, I've basically been listening to it for a while. So oddly enough, Instagram brought us to where we are today. And I also had to remake the intro, but I did it. I got it together. It should work. Fingers crossed. So we're going to listen to the intro to the show right now, right as we're about to end, and Rocket for Russia is going to come on, but this intro is going to be used over and over again. So hopefully it will work. And so we're going to listen to the intro, and then I've got two more songs that I'm going to play. They were both recommended to me by Rebecca Schiffman, and in the next interview she talks a little bit about each of them. The first one is the song Mixer by Nap Eyes. If you listen to the show, you know I am a big fan of Nap Eyes. So it was good to hear that, you know, they'd made it out to LA and other people with good taste were listening to them, or that other people were listening to them in general. And then the other recommendation that she gave was the song Better Find Out for Yourself by Buffy St. Marie off of her 1969 album Illuminations. So I am going to play those two songs right after the intro, and then it's Rocket for Russia. Tune in again next week for the second part of the interview. We talk about a few different things. It's good. It's great. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Alright, a couple more. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Wait, should I do one more that's more varied? Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR. Hey, you're listening... Oh, wait, ready?
Yeah.
Hey, you're... Okay. Alright, I'm gonna start in 3, 2, 1. Hey, you're listening to A Face for Radio on CITR.
Singers of our faith. liked a bit. Then I thought about my Jesus and meditation again. The things I have I don't need, and the things I want, what's good in them. But it's easy to understand what it is that makes me feel this way. It's not so easy to make all of my problems go away. Then again, what else is there? Another life, some other way. I really don't know what you mean. Really trying to find that way. The judge came to my house and he knew about my job situation. I didn't have to explain it to him. Took everything I said as insinuation. Then he looked into my eyes and said something about you're playing a game. That's when I looked a little past him, pointlessly repeating what I'd said again. But it's easy to understand what it is that makes me feel this way. It's not so easy to make all of my problems go away. Then again, what else is there? Another life, some other way. Really don't know what you mean. Really trying to find that way.
Soap when he's at it.